listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Hello, and welcome to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And we're broadcasting live today from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on this sunny, hot August day. Remember that you can always listen to any of the shows on the Heritage Radio Network online at heritageradionetwork.com. All the shows are archived for eternity, so you can listen at any time, any place. And pretty soon we'll be podcasting the shows, coming up very soon, so you can take them with you, too. So, in keeping with my theme of the past few weeks of talking about summer vegetables, I started thinking about where we are in terms of the summer and what's in season. And it's mid-August, and here in the Northeast, that means you can start to kind of feel little hints of the end of the summer coming. There are just subtle changes in the weather. Even though we're finally getting all our really hot weather, the sun's a little bit lower in the sky. It's getting darker just a little bit earlier. You start to see a few leaves falling down. You know the end is coming. But the good news is we still have at least 2 months of vegetables to go before the first frost. So not all hope is lost yet. But the spring vegetables are done. I pulled my sugar snap plants out of my garden the other day. They were finished, but I optimistically put a fall crop in. I read on the seed packet that you could do another crop, so I thought I'd try it out this time. And I put some baby carrots in April, and they're still baby carrots. They're practically fetal carrots. I've never seen smaller carrots. I've pretty much given up on those. And I still have a lot of tomatoes. I mentioned the tomato blight last week, but my tomatoes seem to be holding on, so I'm still okay, crossing my fingers. But there's still a lot of stuff left out there. I went to the green market yesterday, and it was just flowing, overloaded with stuff. Things like melons are really starting to come out now, and I had some amazing corn the other day, just the sweetest corn I've ever eaten. Zucchini, eggplant, all of that. The late summer vegetables, the Mediterranean kind of vegetables are really pumping out now too. There were a lot of beans, the first okra of the season, which I'm very excited about. We're definitely going to talk about okra in a show coming up soon because okra, I think, is also one of the great misunderstood vegetables. And of course, lots of greens. The greens are really happening now too. And so I thought I would devote a whole show to greens because I love greens and I have a lot to say about greens. So I thought I'd do a whole half hour on greens. So what I want to talk about are not just the greens that you can buy in the market, but the greens that you can also get for free. There's edible food out there all around us. You just have to know how to find it and what to do with it. So we'll talk about the usual chard and spinach and collards and kale and all of that. But what I also want to talk about are things like dandelions and nettles, which are out there and free for the taking. And we live in a pretty affluent era. I mean, recession notwithstanding, we're living in the most affluent time in history. And we can pretty much purchase whatever food we want. But it's funny to think how some of the foods that we've always associated with poverty, with rural poverty, turn out to be really the best foods for us. You know, we can afford what we think of as the highest nutritional value foods. But really, the stuff that people have been eating, that poor people have been eating for centuries, turns out really to be better. Things like greens and beans, rice, beans, really basic stuff. Greens are probably about as nutritionally packed as foods come. And often they're a lot cheaper than other vegetables out there. And like I was saying earlier, some of the best greens out there are free. One of those is the dandelion green. And if you grew up in the suburbs like I did, you know, you had neighbors who were out there in full battle force fighting the dandelion in their yard. We think of dandelions as like this scourge, this pest that we need to totally fight with chemicals and with tools. But dandelions are actually a really great food source, and we don't think of them that way. In Italy and in France, they've always eaten them and they've always known that. But here in the U.S., we like to dump poison on them and kill them. And that's really stupid because they're a great food. When the early settlers arrived in the States, especially on the East Coast centuries ago, they really struggled to make it through the winter with all the food that they had grown in the summer and put up. all the, you know, the hunting they had done, all the meat, all the preserved food. You know, they were lucky if they got through the winter with that. And early in the spring, people were pretty close to starving. If they didn't have a lot of food saved up, they were going to get pretty close to not making it through. And luckily for them, the dandelions pop up before any other plant. And so these little tender spring green dandelions would come up practically through the snow. And they were the first edible plant out there. Even with other wild edibles growing later in the season, those were going to be the first ones. And they really kept people alive in the spring. Dandelions are an incredible nutritional powerhouse of a vegetable. They are really high in vitamin A and really high in iron and calcium, too. So they could help people survive when there wasn't much else left to live on. And they were really, truly a survival food. And the leaves of dandelions are more nutritious, really, than almost any green that you could buy in the store. They actually have more beta-carotene than carrots, which is pretty crazy. They have more iron and more calcium than spinach. And they're also full of Bs, Cs, E, D, biotin, potassium, phosphorus, magnesium, zinc, everything. In a free vegetable that just grows on lawns and on the side of the road. It's kind of crazy. And it's too bad that we view them as a bane or as a scourge, because they're one of nature's really great food gifts. And if you just pick the little young tender leaves before the flowers appear, you can saute them or throw them into soups and just eat them that way. Once the flowers come out, they're a little bit too bitter. They have alkaloid compounds that develop, and they'll be a little bit too bitter. So you have to eat them early in the spring. But then again, in the fall, there'll be a second round of leaves that come out. And those pop up in the fall kind of just in time to get people through when food starts to become scarce again in the fall, when the crops start to die and the hunting becomes scarce. There's a whole new crop of dandelions out there. And they actually taste better after they've had a little bit of a frost nip on them. They get a little bit sweeter. So it's really nice, very convenient. The flowers actually are edible too, but most people would probably find them too bitter to eat. I did, in my research, find some stuff about Japanese pickled dandelion flowers, which I have never heard of or never seen before. If anybody's ever seen them or knows anything about them, please let me know. You can find me on Facebook, on Why We Cook on Facebook, and let me know. So if you're interested in eating dandelions, make sure you pick them from places that haven't been sprayed. Certainly not from a golf course or from a lawn where somebody's been spraying chemicals. But in rural areas, you can find them. Don't eat any that are too close to the road also, because car exhaust builds up in plants and you don't want any of that nasty stuff. And the other great free wild plant out there is something called the stinging nettle, which if you grew up in a rural area or if you did any horseback riding or if you're a hiker, you may have encountered. Nettles are a plant that have little barbs on them that actually sting you when you come in contact with them, and it can be pretty painful. But if you pick those nettles with a pair of gloves on and then cook the leaves, you have yourself one high protein vegetables. Nettles are over 10% protein, which in the plant world is a huge amount. They have the highest protein of any plant on the planet, practically, which is pretty amazing. But you have to make sure you cook them, because you can't get that protein without cooking them. And make sure you wear gloves if you pick them. They're very popular in Italy in poorer rural areas. They're picked and they're put into soups, or they're cooked and pureed and put into pasta. But we tend to not eat them. They're another kind of thing that we think of as a nasty weed that we want to get rid of. Since you'll probably not be going out and picking nettles or dandelions and eating them for dinner tonight, let's talk about the greens you can buy in the market. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the two major families of greens, the one I call the soft leafy greens and the sturdier cruciferous greens. We'll be right back on Why We Cook.
Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. Remember that you can listen to any of our shows anytime online at heritageradionetwork.com. And if you'd like to become a fan of this show, Why We Cook, you can find us on Facebook. If you have any questions, comments, feel free to write to me, recipes, anything. And if you're listening to the show live and you want to call in any questions, the number is 718-497-2128. So today we're talking about greens. And in the first segment, I talked about the free ones out there, the dandelions and the nettles, all the kind of crazy wild food you can find out there in the world. But let's be realistic here, people. I doubt anybody's really going to be doing that very much. So let's talk about what you can find in the market. The greens are at their peak right now in the market, and they'll be getting better even more so going into the fall as we get into some of the sturdier greens. So I like to break greens down along two kind of general categories. The ones that are softer and leafier, like spinach and chard and arugula and beet greens, and then the sturdier greens from the cruciferous family, and cruciferous vegetables are the cabbages, also called the brassicas. Things like cabbages, kale, broccoli rabe, the mustard family, the collards, something called tatsoi. Those are all like the sturdier, kind of tougher greens. And the first group cooks really quickly. You just wilt them, basically a little bit of heat, a little bit of moisture. They wilt down, they cook really quickly. The second group needs a little more aggressive cooking and a little more time to kind of tame them. They're much sturdier. They all have different qualities also that affect how you should cook them. But first, let's talk about how you should clean them and store them. Greens usually prefer sandy earth. They like sandy ground. They like a lot of drainage. And they often have crinkly leaves. So a lot of dirt and a lot of grit gets caught up in those leaves. And especially if you're buying at a farmer's market or from a farmer, your stuff's going to be a lot dirtier than if you buy the pre-washed, triple-bagged, you know, agribusiness kind of vegetables. So proper cleaning is really key. Otherwise, you'll wind up with a mouthful of grit every time you eat them. So the best way to wash any of these greens is to pull them apart, take them off any stem or any base, separate them completely, fill up a big sink or a big bucket or bowl with really cold water, drop the greens in there and give them a really good bath. You want a lot of water, and you have to really swish them around because any grit that's in there will fall to the bottom of the sink and the greens will float. And that's what you want, is the dirt to separate and fall down. Then lift the greens out, put them in a salad spinner on a towel, drain the sink. And if there's a lot of grit in the sink, do it again. And if you still see grit, do it again. Sometimes with spinach, you have to do it 3 or 4 times. Get the greens out and get them really dry. If you want to store them for any length of time, longer than a day or two, any moisture that's on them will make them rot in the fridge. So make sure you get them really dry. If you have a salad spinner, that's good. If not, roll them up in a towel, kind of swing them around a little bit and get them nice and dry. Put them in plastic bags, put them in the fridge, try to get as much air out as possible and keep them cold. Now, nutrition-wise, greens are just about the best thing you can eat. If you're looking at which vegetable gives you the most bang for your buck, you want the darker, leafier green. Anytime you're looking for a vegetable, look for color, dark color. The greener they are, the leafier they are, the better. And they're also incredibly high in calcium. So in Asian countries where dairy is not a big part of the diet, a big portion of their calcium intake actually comes from greens. And the sturdier and coarser ones have the higher amounts of calcium. So greens like bok choy and collards and kale and mustard greens all have a lot more calcium. The more delicate greens like spinach, arugula, and chard have calcium, but they also have something called oxalic acid in them. And the oxalic acid binds with the calcium and you can't absorb it. So you don't get as much from them, but you certainly get plenty of other stuff from them. So don't not eat them because of that. The green that's really highest in calcium is the collard green. And we usually think of collard greens as something that you eat with traditional Southern food, soul food, and that you have to stew for a really long time. People cook collard greens for hours. But they're actually great if they're just very thinly sliced and sauteed quickly. You can eat them crunchy and tender as opposed to cooked and stewed down. Back to the calcium for a minute, the collards have the highest of any green. 3/4 of a cup of cooked collards has the same amount of calcium as a cup of milk, of cow's milk. And that's amazing for a vegetable. So if you know people who can't eat dairy or don't want to eat dairy, they can get their calcium that way. Now, growing up in New York, I had never really eaten collard greens. We didn't eat them in my family. And I didn't have them until I was an adult. And one night years ago, a friend of mine who was a cook, who was from Brazil, cooked some for me, very, very thinly sliced, just quickly sauteed with some olive oil and some garlic and finished with lemon juice. And they were amazing. They tasted so fresh and so green and minerally and delicious. They were just incredible. I had no idea you could even eat them that way. This was years ago. And I think that that's the best way to eat them. I mean, I love them in the slow stewed fashion with some pork, but I think it's like a whole new world with collards if you slice them up and cook them that way. They're very tender, they have great flavor, and they're so great and so good for you. I like to do them that way and then keep them in the fridge and just eat them cold out of the container. And what I like to do when I saute a green is to wilt it down till the water's gone, but then keep cooking it and let the greens darken down. Because what's happening then is the sugars that are in there will caramelize. I bring this up a lot in these shows when I talk about cooking, that you want to get the moisture out of the food and then give it time to caramelize. Even though it's a green vegetable, it's still got some sugar in it. The longer you do that, the better, to a point. You don't want to overcook them. But I think that's the way to go. If you stew them in liquid, a lot of the vitamins and a lot of the nutrition leaches out in the liquid and into the pot. And that's why people drink what they call pot liquor, which is the juice that's left behind with the collards. So you want to make sure you kind of reclaim the vitamins that way. Another really cool thing to do with a sturdy green like kale or collards is to slice them up really, really thin. It's called chiffonade, where you kind of stack the leaves up, roll them up, and then slice them into very, very fine ribbons, like a 2-millimeter ribbon. Then toss those ribbons with some olive oil and some salt, spread them out on a sheet pan, and put them in the oven, just leaving the pilot on. And what happens is they dehydrate overnight and get really, really crispy and dry. And you let them completely dry out, and they become this really green, really crunchy, dried out snack food, basically. It's sort of like eating green chips, but much better for you. So that's kind of a fun thing to do with it. You can also eat those guys raw, too. Kale and collards are also really good raw if you slice them up super, super thin. They have to be very finely cut so that you can actually chew them up. But they're really nice sliced up raw. Toss them with a little ricotta salata, which is pressed salted ricotta cheese. A little sliced red onion, some olive oil, a little sherry vinegar, and it's great. It makes a really good salad. So I mentioned kale there, and kale is also one of my favorite vegetables, especially the Tuscan kale, lacinato kale, which is almost black. And it's got those beautiful, long, dark, crinkly leaves and great flavor. And it's really good just chopped up and sautéed with garlic. But it's also nice if you cook it down until it gets kind of soft and then puree it. And you get this really dark, black, green, earthy puree. You can then blend it into mashed potatoes, swirl into mashed potatoes, or spread it on little toast for crostini and put some shaved pecorino on top. It's great. It makes a beautiful little spread. And one last thing before we go to break is to mention the mustard green. Mustard greens are also in that same family. They have a really pungent, strong flavor. They're really good stewed also like a collard, but they're also great sautéed very quickly. And what I like to do is kind of layer the flavor. So I'll sauté mustard greens with a little mustard oil and then sprinkle in a few black mustard seeds. So you're kind of experiencing the flavor on three different levels. It's kind of a nice way to get three different kind of levels of mustardiness. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about the softer greens, the things like spinach and arugula. So we'll be right back on Why We Cook.
Him. I've got friends that don't know who I am.
I said you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan, and you're listening to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on this hot August day. And it's kind of hot here in the studio, too. Feels like summer today. So it's summer, and we're talking about vegetables, and we're talking about greens today, different ways to cook them, different ways to use them. We started out talking about things like dandelions and nettles, which you can go out and pick from local parks. Well, don't tell them I sent you, because you can get caught for doing that. But if you have a yard or a neighborhood area that's not sprayed, you can go out and pick those. And then we talked a little bit about collards and kale, some of the sturdier greens. And now I want to talk about the more tender greens, the non-cruciferous family of greens, the things like chard and spinach and arugula and beet and turnip greens, all of those. There's also this whole other world, too, of Asian greens, which I probably won't even have time to get to today. All the bok choy, pak choy, yu choy, gailan, all of those, the Chinese cabbages. We'll save that for another show. We'll do a whole show on Asian vegetables one of these days. So, you know, when you eat spinach, sometimes you get that kind of funny sensation on your teeth, that sort of weird furry feeling on your teeth after you eat sauteed spinach. Have you ever experienced that? Well, that's the oxalic acid in the spinach. And greens like spinach and chard and beet greens all have it. And oxalic acid is just something that's present in those types of greens. And it doesn't hurt you. It's harmless. But what happens is it binds with the calcium in the greens, and it prevents you from absorbing the calcium in them. But it's not a big deal at all. You should still eat them. But if you ever wondered what that kind of furry feeling was from the spinach, that's what it is. And if you cook the spinach with a little more olive oil, sometimes that really helps that furriness to go away. But these greens, because they're so brightly colored, the greens and the reds and everything are really high in the phytonutrients like vitamin A and beta carotene. So you should still be eating them because they're really good for you, even though they don't have the calcium that we talked about in the previous segment. The oxalic acid also will react slightly with iron. So if you cook these greens in a cast iron pan, they can discolor a little bit, but it's totally harmless. Okay, so if you're buying these types of greens, let's talk first about things like beets and turnips. Because if you buy beets or you buy turnips and the greens are attached, you're going to get double for your money. So when you're shopping for them, look for beets or turnips that have nice greens on them too, because you're going to be paying for them anyway, so you may as well use both. So you buy your beets or you buy your turnips, roast the roots, and then saute the greens, and then you can serve them two ways. I've done this with beets where I'll serve the beets roasted and quartered and drizzled with some nice olive oil and sea salt. And then I'll saute the greens with garlic and sherry vinegar and serve those on the same plate. Then what I'll also do is take some of those roasted beets and I'll do a quick pickle of them in some red wine vinegar and some honey and put that on the plate so I have a beet trio. I like to do that, kind of take one vegetable and take it in three different directions and then serve it all together. And the same thing with turnips. You can braise or simmer your turnips and then saute the greens also. And a nice thing to do with something like a turnip is to braise them with a little soy sauce and some mirin, which is a sweet cooking wine from Japan, and a little sake and a little butter. And you just simmer them in that until they're cooked and the liquids evaporate and you wind up with this really nice glaze. Then chiffonade up the greens and toss them in at the end until they wilt, or just saute them. And of course, talking about spinach, you know, spinach is so ubiquitous. Everybody's cooked it. Everybody eats it. It seems a little bit silly to even mention it when there are all these other interesting greens. But we should give it its due because we love it. And if you are shopping for spinach, what I like to do is get the bunch spinach, the flat leaf spinach in a bunch, or baby spinach. But remember, with spinach, it cooks down to almost nothing. So you have to buy a lot more than you think you'll even need because it just wilts down so much. And it also gives off a lot of water as it cooks. So you have to drain it. If you can only find those bags of that crinkly spinach that are sealed up in cello bags, that's okay too. And actually, when you cook that down, it doesn't cook down as much because it's a lot sturdier. So you get a little bit more for your money. But I like the texture of the flat leaf spinach better. And I really like something called New Zealand spinach, which isn't even really spinach. It's not even related, but it has sort of a pointy leaf where spinach is more rounded, and it's a little bit sweeter, and it has a hollow stem, and I really like it. It wilts down really well. And I like to just, you know, quickly saute the spinach with some onions and garlic, and then maybe even turn it into soup sometimes. Like, sometimes I'll saute greens, and then I'll just turn them into soup. So you saute up onions and garlic, throw in your spinach, add a little stock, simmer it for a few minutes, and then puree it. And the shorter the simmering time, the greener it'll be. You don't want to kill the color in that. And it's good cold, it's good hot. I actually used to cook for a family. I was their personal chef and slave. And I would cook this spinach soup for them and keep it in the fridge, and their little kids would drink it cold right out of the fridge, which was pretty amazing. One other thing before we get to the end of the show today, of course, is I want to mention chard. Because chards, I think, are a great vegetable, and they're delicious, and people don't necessarily know, you know, how to use them. But chards, Swiss chard, come, you know, in red and in green and yellow. You can buy them in bunches of mixed colors. And chards are kind of like beet greens without any beet. They're basically the same plant, but all the energy went into growing the leaf instead of growing the root. It's like the beet forgot to form, and all the energy went to the leaf. And the leaves are broader and softer than beet green leaves because of that. And they have thick stems, red, white, or yellow stems. And the leaves are kind of veined with the color of the stem. And they have this really nice kind of minerally, flinty, green flavor. You can really taste the chlorophyll in them because they're so green. But you also get this nice sweetness from that kind of beety element that's in there. And chard is super nutritious, too, because you're not only getting all the green, but you're getting the red, the beta-carotene, from the red part of it. So it's two in one. You want to just wash it like spinach. Wash it really, really well. But cut off those thick stems and chop them up and keep them separate. You want to cook them separately because they're firmer. Heat up a pan. Heat up some oil. Sauté the stems first. Then throw in the leaves because the stems take some time. And then really let those leaves wilt down. Like I was saying before, let the sugars caramelize in the leaves. Let them really cook. You could also keep the stems separate, chop them up, and do a little pickling on that too, like I mentioned with the beets. Just put them in a little brine with some red wine vinegar, some honey, some salt. Bring that to a simmer, shut it off. You have a little quick pickled charred stem. It's really nice. And then serve them together. And when I saute chard, like I keep saying, cook it down. Let it caramelize a little bit. Let it really go. And let it darken down. Get some color in it. I think that's the way to go. And there's a recipe that I really like to make with chard, which is a stuffing that I like to do if I'm cooking a whole fish, or I'll wrap fish fillets around it, or I'll kind of stuff chicken thighs with it. And basically, it's a fennel and chard and currant stuffing. It's very Mediterranean. And you just take a big fennel bulb, dice it up, and saute it for a long, long time. Get it really brown, really caramelized, about 15 minutes. Whack up some garlic, throw the garlic in, let that cook down too, let that get some color on it. Then take a whole big bunch of red chard, slice it up nice and thin, stems and all, throw that in the pot. Let that wilt down, and then let that cook until it dries out. Get rid of all the moisture, let it caramelize. Then I take some currants. Currants are just little tiny, they're like raisins, tiny little dried fruit. Currants that I've soaked in some white wine, a couple tablespoons of each. Soak the currants, throw the currants and the white wine in the pot, throw in some chopped rosemary, cook it again until it's dry. Get all the moisture out, add some salt, and then cool it down. You never want to stuff any raw protein with a hot stuffing because it heats up too quickly. You can get bacteria, danger zone, bad news. So let the stuffing cool down. Then what I like to do is take a whole fish, like a 3-pound snapper or striped bass. I'm not really snapper anymore because they're very endangered, but a hybrid striped bass or some kind of nice 3-pound whole fish. Trim off the fins, get it all ready. Keep it whole, though. Score the flesh on the sides down to the bone. Rub the surface of the fish, the skin, with some good olive oil. Season it up. Season the cavity. Then take that charred stuffing and on an oiled sheet pan, mound it up so it's like a raft. It's like a coral reef of that charred stuffing. And then prop the fish right over it. So the stuffing is going up inside the fish's cavity. The fish has been gutted, of course. You want the fish standing up like in an action pose. It should look like it's swimming. And some of this bright green charred stuffing will be coming out underneath it like seaweed. Put the whole thing in a 400-degree oven and roast it for about 10 minutes per pound. So if you have a 3-pound fish, give it about 30 minutes. You can always tell if it's done by looking where you've scored the flesh down to the bones. Take a little peek by the bones. If it's opaque, it's done. About 30 minutes, 10 minutes per pound, it's done. You take it out, let it cool down, transfer the whole thing to a platter, and serve it up family style. And then people can kind of just pick at it themselves. And what happens is that stuffing absorbs flavor from the fish, and the bits of the stuffing that are sticking out around the fish get really crispy and caramelized, and the currants get really sweet. So give that a try. If you do, let me know how it goes. It's also great just on its own as a side dish. And I've talked so much about greens, I've run out of time today. So let me know what you think. Get on Facebook, check out the Why We Cook page, become a fan. I'd love to hear from you. And we'll see you next week. I want to thank my producer, Lorenzo, and the engineer today is Nat. And we'll see you again. Thanks again. Good night.